previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
We'll go to a nice dinner. We can talk about whatever you want. It'll be nice. Hi, David.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Okay. Today's episode is Season 9, Episode 2, Budget Cuts. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave, who has clearly been awake for 7.5 minutes.
On about less than 5 hours sleep, I'm going to say.
And you're driving to another country. Cool.
Not until tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Hi.
Hello.
Reminder that you can purchase an ad on this podcast. It's $100 for a commercial message, $50 for a personal message. Please go to previously.tv/ads for more information. That's previously.tv/ads. Let's talk about budget cuts.
Baby. Yes, let's.
But we won't get to them for a while. We have to start with our D plot, Sophie Cons On. Sometime between the premiere and this episode, Ian Ziering got a Caesar haircut.
I remember that time in history.
Very, very, very blonde, like ABBA blonde.
Yeah. And this was like years after the premiere of ER. Like this was many, many moons after George Clooney did what he could to repopularize it. So this is incomprehensible, but everyone's hair is different in this episode because it's the first one that's not supposed to be taking place hours after the season finale. So everyone is going to be debuting new hair. Anyway, they take Sophie to see you, and she spins a bunch of bullshit about buying her school books, and Steve offers to lend her cash while she's waiting for a student loan check. And she insists that she'll be fine and flirts with him real hard before getting rid of him. And I don't know if you know anything about how student loans work. This is weird. But what happens here is the school is keeping her student loan on account for her, though she can take a check for the full amount if she wants, which she does. And it's $5,000. But like, can you get a student loan without enrolling? I don't understand how this scam works.
I don't either, because it's like barely a scam,
right?
Because she's just taking, like, she got the student loan. I mean, I guess the scam would come in the event that she is not who she says she is,
right?
But
right.
She did have to give ID, so that I guess is the scam. But I was extremely fortunate in that my parents were able to pay for my university, so I am not familiar with whether this is a thing, but given that it's Beverly Hills 90210, I am going to confidently assert that this is not how this works ever. And listeners, let us know.
Yeah, I mean, I did have a student loan, but only for 1 year and in another country. So I don't think any of this was applicable. It also wasn't through the school. It's a private loan. So this is bizarre. I think your theory is probably the likeliest to make sense, that she's just like straight doing identity theft of someone, but that we haven't found that out yet. And yet at the same time, I don't necessarily expect that's what we're going to see happen because it's the show and they're dumb.
Yeah. Also, we really don't care. So whatever they end up doing with it is fine.
It's fine. We don't. So later, Sophie's shopping and stops so deliberately when she sees David and turns around that it seems intentional, like she's stopping to make sure that he sees her before turning around. It's really strangely directed or acted or both. You can see this moment in the visual aids. I made a GIF because it was so strange. But I guess her trying to leave before he sees her is because she's supposed to be at school and not shopping for luxury items. But anyway, he comes over to her and just reaches into her bag and pulls out what looks like lingerie, which isn't okay, even if he is checking the price tag so that he can nag that Steve is sleeping on the couch because he thinks Sophie can't afford a motel room. Like, A, keep your grubby hands out of other people's shopping. B, mind your business.
That,
what the hell?
Bugged the shit out of me. Like, I wouldn't do that to you. And
no.
We've all been crammed in a lingerie dressing room with your sister, and I still would be like, may I have a look?
Yes, like, you should specify when you say we've all been crammed into dressing room. You mean both, you, me, and my sister, yes, not that Dave was there.
No, we would not put Dave through that. Thanks for the tip, Dick.
Anyway, she finally admits that she's in LA because she wants to be famous. But when David quizzes her on what showbiz talent she may have, her answer is none. Which is fine. She's 2 years away from the advent of Survivor, and then she can just be on any number of reality shows after that without having any talent. But since they don't know that yet, we hear this clip two.
So what exactly are you planning on being famous for?
Being me.
So, reality show star.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, look, if you look like Laura Layton, sure, that's not a bad plan. Furthermore, I feel she should have been the first bachelorette because she really needs some help in the dating taste department. And the
garbage
they come up with on that show would be perfect for her, given that she seems to enjoy David.
True. So then Sophie later sneaks onto the grounds of an exclusive hotel, not the Bellage, as far as we can tell, steals two robes from a maid cart and makes David strip. And then she also does it herself, driving him wild with her naked back, which you can also see a gif of him like, oh, well, if that's the back, I guess I better hurry up and take my giant pants off. It's really strange. But when the maid comes back, Sophie like puts on a sketch about the two of them having forgotten their key in their room and asking this maid to open the pool gate for them. And David jumps in, notes searchlights in the sky, comments there must be a movie premiere nearby. He asks if she's coming into the water, and she says it's so great, she's already trying to remember it. Sophie brings Steve breakfast and gets under this quilt with him, which apparently she bought for him and then put on it in the night without washing it, which I'm sorry is gross, but she's still very flirty. When he mentions that he thought they were going to hook up after she was done at school, she dodges that she was looking for a waitressing job. And Steve is upset that she's spending money she doesn't have on gifts for him, but she waves him off. And he very intensely says maybe he wasn't clear, but he wants to go out with her. And she's all casual, like, so we'll go. And he's like, on a date. And finally, she says she can't, though she lies that it's because there's a guy back in Boston. And they just broke up and she's still sad about it. And he says she seems fine, which is not the point. Take a no for a no, Steve. But then he asks how she got home the night before because he heard a car pull up. And she says it was a friend from school. He says she makes friends fast. Honestly, he is lucky that she is a con artist because no one else would allow this kind of caveman treatment from someone she's known for 2 days and is specifically not dating. Like, back it up, Steve. Jesus.
Well, but she's staying in his house, like, well, not true. not that he has a right to anything. That is not what I mean. But
no,
it's
no.
Also like, look, Steve, if you have to ask this many questions, trying either to catch her in a lie or to figure out what she's actually up to, right. She's fucking someone else and you're out.
Right.
Janet is right there. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Honestly. Oh, God. So just in case. Sophie checks with David later to make sure that he didn't tell Steve about their date because he has a crush on her and he doesn't have to know about her and David. And instead of seeing that this is shady, David says that Steve is a friend and he won't lie. And Sophie just nods. And later at this fundraiser, which we'll get to, Steve and David watch Sophie model Donna's shitty designs and avoid actually describing the relationship that either of them has with her. And the moment when she looks at them on the from the runway, she winks. They're standing side by side, so they both think that she's winking at her, but Steve does this like woo, like a Gladys Knight in the Pips move with his arms, which I made into two different gifs, one of her with the look, then Steve, one of just Steve, and then we also have for your avatars on various social media just Steve in a still photo making this move because it's that good.
Yeah, the Sanders grin has returned, alas, under false pretenses.
It is a shame. So Steve asks straight out if David drove Sophie home the night before, and David lies that he didn't. And later, some guy comes up to David while he's literally in the middle of emceeing the fashion show segment of the auction to compliment David's playlist and give him his card. He's from a college radio station looking for new voices, barf. And then Sophie's waiting for David when he comes home. He just got a tryout to be a DJ at this station. And she's all like, I didn't come here planning to wet my pants for you, but here they are. I'm paraphrasing. And then he kisses her because fuck Steve, ultimately, is the end of that for this episode.
Oh, doesn't she also like call him in the middle of the set?
That's the next episode.
Oh, okay. Barf.
That's when he actually has the tryout. This is just the right setup for the tryout.
Gotcha. It all runs together, folks. All runs together.
On to our C plot. The hunters become the hunted by the IRS. So Donna comes to Noah's stupid boat to unveil the new hair that she was hiding in the season premiere. You can see this in the visual aids. Sarah, you noted in your pics that this is her best look. I have to agree. It's very cute on her.
It is. She got bangs. It looks healthy. It's a bit dated. It's that like orangey red, that like Lucy red with the blonde streaks. But look, I had that hair at that time. So, you know, it's cute. And the like updos are a little goofy, but way less crazy and inexplicable and looking like various pastries were affixed to her head and then combed over with her actual hair. So thumbs up. She looks really cute.
We seem to be past the point of like the 90s era of a million tiny loops held together with bobby pins, or else we're just like in the fallow period before that comes back post Bring It On. But for now, she looks good. Yeah. So Noah thinks that his father must still have some money squirreled away. Donna thinks Noah should call his dad since Mr. Hunter said they lost everything. But Noah says that's relative, which is a great point. I actually, as we're recording this, just saw a headline going around on Twitter that Charlie Sheen is on the rocks because he only has $10 million left. So this may be a similar situation for the hunters.
Yeah.
Point being, Noah doesn't actually know if his parents are really in trouble. And when he called, they didn't call him back. Donna thinks he needs to go to them and show them they haven't lost everything. Like, if Noah's all they have left, yes, they have. But anyway, Noah comes to see his dad. At his office, five question marks, again, they were supposed to be from back east, whatever. He's tense as hell about ruining his legacy and thousands of people's livelihoods, and Noah is a useless fucking idiot in clip number three.
Hey, what's it about?
It's about family. Look, I know I'm showing up late in the game here, but I want to help.
So what do you want to do?
I don't know. I mean, we can talk about it. You tell me what to do, I'll do it.
I told you years ago. You start in the mailroom, you do the executive training program, you learn the ropes, and then you be the son who could watch your father's back. So my guts aren't chum on the water for sharks like these.
I don't understand, like, if Noah didn't have a strategy, like, just because Donna told him to come, he didn't have to do it. Like, what are you doing distracting this guy when he's, like, probably in the middle of putting the company into bankruptcy proceedings? Like, what are you offering him? Because it sounds like nothing.
Yeah. Especially since you were nothing but a cube poo jackass about and to him for, you know, up until that point. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, it's about family. Like, no, it isn't. Right. That's not always a good thing. Just go away. But no, right. We all have to live in this bell jar. So let's just get on with it.
At the same time, for Noah's father to turn this back around on Noah, like, it is not for all of his many faults on Noah that you didn't hire competent lawyers and accountants, is A. B, if you really think that Noah could have prevented this, like, how do we know that Noah has any expertise in any of this at all? Because I haven't seen it.
Still be in the mailroom, also. Right. Isn't he supposed to be, like, the same age as the gang?
Yeah.
So yes, he'd still be like head of the mailroom. So I'm not really sure what he's going to do if he wasn't in the mailroom at law school, but sure.
Right. Point is, Noah feels bad. So Mr. Hunter comes to the Peach Pit after dark later to take Noah for a drive. They end up at a park watching strangers' kids play baseball like pervs.
Creepy.
Yeah. Mr. Hunter is sure Mrs. Hunter will bounce back from this by marrying well. He also makes small talk about the game, forgetting that Noah played in high school. And there's an anecdote about an autographed Reggie Jackson ball that Mr. Hunter got Noah when he was a kid and Josh got Pete Rose. I lost the thread of this. Did you follow this at all?
No, it makes no sense. Like getting an autographed ball. I don't know. Like he got an autographed ball. Josh got Pete Rose. I thought was pretty classic. Like, ooh, burn. But then he's like, then you wouldn't stop bugging me to go play with you. Like being a Yankee fan slash being excited about awesome memorabilia. Mm-hmm. It doesn't translate to.
Right.
Whatever. Anyway.
Anyway, whatever happened, they went and played baseball for like the first and last time until today. Because Mr. Hunter's proud of Noah. Now he wants to have a catch. It is very dumb. And then Noah goes back to his dad's office that night at martini o'clock, as we hear in clip four.
Three olives. Anything less is a crime. Tell that to the IRS. Running low.
Let's go somewhere else for a drink. Come on.
Frankly, I'm swamped.
Look, will you walk away? It's over. And this is not what life's about.
Kids today. No respect for capitalism.
I mean, whatever to that statement, but like Noah's saying, let's go somewhere else and buy a drink. So it seems to me that he's trying to stimulate the local economy and that Mr. Hunter would be about that.
Also, Noah, he can't just be like, well, fuck this. Like, he's being investigated. His assets have been frozen. He doesn't get to be like, peace out. I'm taking a houseboat to Mexico.
Right.
Ugh.
Anyway, Noah tries again in clip five.
Look, I'm trying here. I thought we were getting somewhere. And the other day at the park.
Was for you.
For me. Oh, so it meant nothing to you.
Don't pull it apart. Just take it with you and go home.
Look, I listed the boat today. The second mortgage on the club, I can get you $400,000 or $500,000.
I'm sure your mother will appreciate it.
Again, nothing. I reach out to you and you reach for the stinking martini.
Oh, that was the one thing I had left to look forward to.
Nobody to blame but yourself.
Words to remember.
Okay. We already knew that Noah is dumb, but a child could interpret these hints that Mr. Hunter is dropping. Like, they are very broad.
Yeah. His mom's going to remarry. Like, could you... Hello? Also, don't knock over a full cocktail. That's not how we do things.
No, that's really rude. Anyway, Noah stomps out and is waiting for the elevator when he hears the gunshot, because fucking duh. And Vincent Young's attempts to look shattered by the sight of his dad's corpse, which, because it's primetime network TV, are just like his feet under the desk, are so bad. So, so bad. Must be seen to be believed in the visual aids. They are shocking.
I couldn't even come up with words to describe, or more accurately, I had so many ways to describe this face that I like early stage hairball eruption.
Yeah.
Extreme sinusitis. Trying to pass cube poo composed of tiny snakes. so many. None of them translate to shock or grief. Just, I am very stuffed up and really need to take a crap. It's bad.
Yeah, it's cruel when they try to make him experience emotions because he's so bad. But anyway, then Noah's back at that baseball diamond tossing up balls and hitting them when Donna finds him. Some lawyer is going to be making funeral arrangements for Mrs. Hunter, and Donna is sorry and useless. And then Noah pulls out a bottle of Tanqueray and tries to cry in clip number six.
You think the police will miss us from the crime scene? Suicide. It is a crime, isn't it? I don't know why. The only person you're hurting is yourself.
You know that's not true.
You know how to make a perfect martini? Let me tell you. You put three olives in it. My father taught me that.
Signed by Reggie Jackson.
I wanted this my whole life. Now
what? But he gave but Now it's too late because you've ruined the resale value.
I was going to say, the whole thing is about you trying to raise money. I don't know much about sports memorabilia, but it seems like that would be worth a couple of bucks.
Yeah, probably. Or it was before. I will say Vincent Young apparently does have some baseball experience because he's putting the fun back in Fungo. Mm-hmm. Sorry. These are the little shreds that I cling to, people.
Yeah. I will also say, though, I can't speak to his baseball acumen, but it's a very snot-forward interpretation of crying. You can hear it.
Well put.
In the clip.
Thus the sinusitis.
Yes.
I just kept thinking, perfect martini. My father taught me that. Your father was played by Ray Wise. Why couldn't he have taught you anything about indicating anything? Get used to it, folks, because here's where we are with Vincent Young's thespionics for the time being.
God. Well, we have more to come. But first, we have a message from Rebecca.
Rebecca named her ad I Heart again with this. Aw, we heart you back, Rebecca. And kind of turned us loose on what to do with it. So our first thought was, what about a list of famous or infamous Rebecca-i we'd have liked to see on the show?
But then we remembered the show had a notorious Rebecca, the Noxzema girl, Rebecca Toni Marchette Gayheart, who's marries Dylan in 2 weeks, then is accidentally assassinated by her own gangster father's story arc. Seems like it happened in another lifetime, but still can't be discounted. So
on the eve of Dylan's return to the show from his grief/Brenda Boning tour in Europe, we thought, let's list 5 Rebecca-i we wish we could go back and cast as Dylan love interests.
Number 1, Rebecca Romaine, who is pretty and would tower hilariously over Mr. McKay and everyone else.
She really would. She's taller than me. Rebecca, Mrs. David Mamet Pigeon, whose wooden deliveries would fit right in with the rest of the credits cast at this point.
Number 3, either of the Beckys from famous original Roseanne, because then the humorous stuff might have an outside shot of actually landing.
Number 4, President Coolidge's pet raccoon, who would make an excellent roommate for Dylan and Tony's cat, Trouble. Just kidding, she'd probably eat the cat, but at least that's compelling television.
5, and finally, current bachelorette Becca Kufrin, who in theory could do better than Dylan, but based on the wad we're pretty sure she's going to say yes to on the upcoming finale, should probably go with the stick insect in practice.
Rebecca, thank you so much for listening and supporting the show, and please know we would never make you work Shadowcaster.
Oh, thank you, Rebecca!
Thank you, Rebecca!
And here's the B plot. The club puts on a fundraiser for the clinic. So the cold open starts extremely abruptly with Mrs. Wyatt coming to meet Kelly. Some broad on the board no longer cares about free clinics and is all about illiteracy now. Kelly tries to argue the point with Mrs. Wyatt. I have a feeling she said these sort of things to the board member before she came here to give you bad news. And it kind of seems like Mrs. Wyatt just wants to get out of there. Clip 7.
Tastes change. Your budget's been cut.
Also, yay, Mrs. Wyatt, but also your budget? Kelly's basically running the place is the implication of this entire subplot, which...
Yeah.
That and all the gold getting blown up per culo nonstop throughout the entire episode about how she's the heart and soul of the Wyatt Clinic. Then it's, call it the Taylor Clinic and burn it to the ground with her in it. Sorry. Not sorry.
Yeah. So Mrs. Wyatt says she's already had this conversation with Dr. Martin and says that if Kelly cuts the budget now, it gives her time to apply for grants. I don't understand why this would be assigned to Kelly at all. I know her title is administrator, but
she's a secretary. She answers the phones and puts charts on the door. That's
her job.
She
doesn't even do filing. They have the developmentally disabled kid to do that. Not anymore, but he was for a while.
Yeah.
Anyway. Mrs. Wyatt suggests starting her cuts with the nursing staff, and Kelly has to be the one to fire them. Again, don't think that would be under her purview at all. But whatever, Kelly goes to the beat to briskly stop Brandon talking about her broken heart and then baby voice at him about her budget problems in clip 8.
But don't worry, this isn't about us.
I wouldn't mind if it was.
I would. It's about work. The Wyatt Foundation slashed our funding. We'll run dry in 2, maybe 3 weeks if I don't do anything.
Any ideas?
Well, I think that publicity would help. Half the city's clinics closed down in 95 and only a handful of them reopened.
Sounds like a story. Public support, put a little squeeze on the foundation for backing out. Let's get started.
Can't you do it alone?
I'd like your help on this, Kel. We'll take the afternoon. We'll call the patients. I could really use you to help me fine-tune the questions.
So we're talking about working together.
Well, I'm not suggesting we incorporate.
Or doing anything legally binding, God forbid. Sorry. I came to you. I really need your help, Brandon.
We can do this, Kel.
No, you can't. That's not reporting. It's editorial, and she can pay for a fucking ad like everybody else. Like Rebecca. Rebecca knows how this works. Thanks, Rebecca.
Right. But even if you decided to take the tack that, like, a clinic getting its budget cut is news, which questionable, like,
yeah.
And even if you decided to grant all of the conflict issues, because, like, what story is in this fucking paper that isn't plagued with conflict of interest issues? We can work on this. That's not her job either. Like, what the fuck?
And you shouldn't work on it either, because she was a complete twunt about even asking and everything else. And based on the timbre of her voice, she is 12 and should not be working outside the home anyway. Like, this is all stupid and bad, and I hate them both, and I can't wait for this to be over.
But Brandon talks her into collaborating on the story, and then Steve shows up. Kelly brings him up to speed. Janet suggests an auction, and they say, wheedle free product out of advertisers, which is like the opposite of how that transactional relationship works, but fine. So Kelly reads a draft of Brandon's piece while he hangs over her shoulder obnoxiously, which you can also see in the visual aids, gorgeously captured by my co-host. And they differ as to what is at stake here in clip 9.
These patients, I know their stories, but the way you write about them makes me realize
how important you are.
How lost they'll be without the clinic.
You'll be okay, Kel. You can do anything, any place. Anybody would be lucky to have you.
So
hi.
Well, okay. So she tells him to stop. And for a second, I think it must be because she's going to tell him this is not about her ability to get another job. It's about an underserved community facing potentially mortal peril. But no, she wants him to stop being kind because of their recent breakup, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, we shouldn't have worked together because I knew this was going to happen. And he's like, what? And she jumps on his face, which is also the visual aids. Thanks, Sarah. And he kisses her back, but she stops it. And then Brandon comes to get Kelly at her place because they still have two more interviews to do. And I swear, please go to the visual aids and tell us if you agree. I think on his ugly tie this time is a beat. Made a diptych of it, like the long what it looks like in the shot, and then a close up. I really think it may be a beat. I don't know what else
just
it could be.
You and I talked about this like seriously a week ago, but it has just now occurred to me that we're talking about the root vegetable, but it's probably supposed to be the Beverly bee.
No,
maybe. I mean,
well. Anyway, go to the visual aids at previously.tv and tell us what you think.
If so, you dare.
She said she'll talk to the interviewees. She also wants to talk about the night before. Doesn't want him to say it didn't mean anything to him. But her solution is that he doesn't have to do the article. She's going to give it to someone at the Chronicle whose name is John Wakefield. And Brandon cries about it in clip 10.
I told him about the clinic and I said that you would give him your notes.
He asked for my help.
The Chronicle has a larger circulation.
That's not why you're doing this.
What if it is, ass? I mean, it's not, but it could be.
Also, don't fucking volunteer his notes to someone else who is his competition. Like,
yeah,
granted, she did ask for a favor, and if that's what she thinks the favor looks like, I guess it's okay, but I would be pissed. Mm-hmm. Like, I did the work, and now I'm just going to hand it to this dude who's not going to do anything with it because he's not his own boss, let's face it.
Yeah. But anyway, she gives him this guy's phone number and shuts the door. And then she's at the club organizing the fundraiser. we find out she's even willing to sell her former wedding gown, which not sure $4 are going to buy a lot of insulin, but fine.
Oh, burn.
And so John Wakefield comes looking for Brandon at the beat, and he snottily introduces him to Steve and Janet. How else? But then it turns out that John Wakefield is an even bigger dick than Brandon is. Clip 11.
I got transcripts of interviews, but the angle I'd use is the Wyatt Foundation. Beverly Hills Beauty abandons Rodeo Drive for an inner city clinic. Gotta love that, huh?
She's trying to drum up donations, not run for office.
Hey, what's her deal anyway?
Take the notes, read them over. If you got any questions, give me a call.
Ah, it writes itself, really, Brandon. These places go belly up all the time.
Well, that's an angle.
It's been done. It's worth a couple of lines. Hey, maybe there is something in it.
Other than trying to get a date?
I tell you what, why don't you hang on to these? I think I've got the story.
I also should have clipped the part where he comes in and is like, nice little paper you got here. Like, cannot get enough of other real journalists being very dismissive about their stupid operation.
No, nor I.
Okay, so you also have to go to the visual aids at previously.tv to see the jank fundraiser sign on the outside of the building and the even more fucking terrible mural that someone has whipped up for the stage. It is a bit.
Colin Jr. strikes again.
So bad. And Lord Pissface David is the jolly auctioneer, which, great choice. But backstage, Janet, Kelly, and Sophie are going to be modeling clothes that Donna mooched from other designers, plus the wedding gown, which Donna was just going to display. Sophie volunteers to model it, and no one says that's okay, and no one also says that they want to do it either, so fine. And then Brandon and his fucking chest hair, which I regret to say you can also see in the visual aids, barge backstage to tell Kelly that her guy from the Chronicle is there. And she's in no mood and tells Brandon to give him his notes already. But Brandon brays that John Wakefield just wants to date Kelly and probably won't be even do a piece on any of this. And when he leaves, Sophie gets all nosy about the wedding dress and advises Kelly to show Brandon what he's missing. And she smirks because showing people what they're missing is like her favorite thing. And Donna is also modeling again. Forget if I mentioned that. So if you want to see her incredibly weird body motions, those are a gift in the visual aids.
Yeah, I will say, call it walking exactly, can you?
And yet, when she's like walking like she thinks a model walks, like walking off stage, you can see it's the only time that she doesn't look like she's trying to hold a quarter in her vagina. Like, it's the only time she's not doing that weird like stiff Barbie walk. I don't know,
she looks super serious too. It's pretty funny.
She's ridiculous. Then Kelly comes out in the wedding dress looking, of course, smug as hell, and Brandon's all disturbed, even more so when Kelly throws her bouquet to John Wakefield and he bids $500, but not for the dress, for dinner with the model. And the radio station guy also bids, and then Wakefield again, and then clip 12.
$1,000.
$1,000,000. Oh,
so, of course, he wins and looks hateful, also, of course. And Kelly looks thrilled that her shitty plan worked, because... And so we find out later the Chronicle story worked by embarrassing the foundation into continuing to fund the clinic. And Kelly is smug as hell some more in an incredibly ugly purple shirt, which Sarah captured as well. In fact, I think that David is wearing like the men's version of it. It's like the limited and express and express men, because he's also in like a purple paisley thing in the following episode. But anyway.
Yeah. Ooh.
Mrs. Wyatt says that Kelly still has to cut her staff by 20%. Kelly insists that they need everyone they have, so she says they can start making cuts with her, which, to give her credit for once, is the smart and correct solution to this problem, which, of course, is why Mrs. Wyatt fights her on it. But Kelly's no longer interested in being, as Mrs. Wyatt says, the patron saint of losing battles, wants a new job, but she'll miss this one. So then Kelly and Brandon walk on the beach while she tells him what happened. He excuses her for using him to get the story out because PR people do it all the time. He wants to go get dessert. She says they can't. He claims the bidding war happened because he was jealous. But it's also why he didn't want John Wakefield to have a story. But then he felt bad, so he wrote it, and the Chronicle ran it under John Wakefield's byline, I guess. I don't know. I don't care. It's all stupid.
I don't know.
He's sick thinking that she'll eventually take up with some other guy and marry someone someday also, probably. And she kisses him and thanks him for their last date and declines his offer to walk her home. Please, Jason Priestley, get out of here.
Just go. Please.
On to the A-plot, Val reconfronts Abby about Val's childhood abuse. So Val's best confidant, David, tells her she's going to get burned if she tells Abby the truth. Val is sick of lying. She threatened to go to the cops a lot with her dad, but she never did. She shot him instead. They're, by the way, talking about this, as I recall, like at a cafe or something. Like, there's totally out in public discussing this. But he thinks she should talk to a lawyer since it's justifiable homicide. Sarah, you're the legal expert. I feel like a lawyer will say there's no case and it was like 4 years ago, so fuck off. Like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah. I mean, if Buffalo authorities classified it suicide.
Right.
What do you, like, who is this for?
Right.
No, don't tell anyone.
Yeah. So Val says Abby lost everything that night. She wants Abby to say that she understands. David says that hating herself is a full-time job, like he gives a fuck. And then Abby rings the doorbell. Oh, they weren't at the cafe. I was thinking of a different scene. They're at the Walsh house. Abby rings the doorbell. Val greets her effusively. And then some other dude is with her who Abby introduces as Carl Schmidt. But no, it's not. It's Hank Bradley, Joe's brother from several seasons ago.
Oh, my God. I completely forgot. This dude, this actor is hilarious. Like, he's really making the most of his, I think he was not informed that this was not like a satire. So he's just like mugging a lot. And I enjoy it because this plot line is so stupid and boring otherwise. So yay, Carl / Hank. Yeah.
you can see in the visual aids, there's a side by side of him from when he came to town in that one episode and here. And I forgot to say so when he was playing Hank in that one episode, but he also went on to be the UPS guy in Legally Blonde. Apologies if I'm saying this for the second time. Anyway, Carl and Abby are an item, and Val intensely says she wanted to talk to Abby private, and Abby basically ignores her. Classic Abby. And at the lounge at the only hotel in town, the Bellage, Val mopes while Abby tries to make her care about Carl by talking up his golf game of all fucking things. But golf isn't all he does. Clip 13.
Free greens at Green Hills Park. Little perk for the boys in blue.
You're a cop?
17 years.
A detective?
No, uniform.
Passed over. It's too bad.
Ooh.
I mean, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. So as the conversation goes on, it turns out Abby told Carl that Mr. Malone died in a car accident. And Val questions Abby about this when Carl goes to check on their table. And Abby says that a woman dating with a suicided husband is going to draw suspicion. Val says Abby didn't do anything. Abby says she didn't want to go back. And when Val says she does, Abby says she and Carl are engaged. Also hisses at Val not to bring up her failed engagement to Bill either, because this is her chance.
Sorry to interrupt. Couldn't Carl, if he's a cop, just look this shit up? I mean, I would.
Yeah, seriously.
Doesn't matter. Carl's stupid.
Right. So Carl comes back to say their table's ready, and Val speaks directly to my heart in clip 14.
Why'd you flash your badge or something?
Never out of uniform.
Carl would never abuse his authority. Well, that's a departure from type. So, Carl, tell me something. You ever kill anybody?
Oh, Valerie. She's kidding.
I love that even Abby's like, she's not, but here we all are. Let's just eat.
So Val shows up at Abby's hotel room the next night, kicks Carl out, and gets real in clip 15.
When I was a kid, and Dad would come into my room. There's nothing I could do.
You can stop this right now. Put this behind you, Valerie.
I'm trying. You have no idea how hard. But he was stronger. And he blackmailed me. He said he would tell you and you would get mad. So crazy, that threat, because
That's all I ever wanted to do was tell you. And it worked.
I don't want to hear this.
I got older. I fought him off.
Why are you doing this?
I didn't do anything. No. I did. I did, finally.
Threatening him. Saying you were going to the police. Next thing I know, he's lying in a puddle of blood. His face, his head.
Wait, the police. How did you know I said that? Told you?
He was getting help.
You knew? Do you have any idea how hard it was for me to tell you the truth? You seem so shocked. But you already knew.
Yes. I had the sickening job of asking my husband if he was having sex with our daughter. Is that what you wanted to hear?
Dad was raping me. If he admitted it to you, why didn't you do anything to stop it?
He was getting help. We were going to be happy again. The three of us. So why did he kill himself?
The Bongos would like to know the answer to that as well. Also, why are we retconning this now? No one cares.
Yeah. I mean, she keeps saying that she killed him. Does she mean she literally did it? Because I cannot keep track of where this story is.
I can't either. I'm glad it's not just me. But it's like, did she actually, like, kill him and stage it and then, like, buried the memory? Is she just in, like, a shame spiral about causing his suicide, which she should be throwing a parade for herself? Fuck him.
Honestly. Yeah.
I understand that they've run out of story for her, but this is just... I don't know. Like, it just makes me a little, like, queasy psychologically that we're revisiting this for, like, soapy effect when it's not, it's not even, like, it would be one thing if it were just trashy, but, like, well done trash, but it's not even that. It's just, like, boring and inexplicable.
No, it's bad. But there's a slap, which you can see in the visual aids because I made a GIF. So Val is walking in late to the fundraiser when Carl intercepts her wanting to talk, which she does not. Abby is upset, he says. Carl's guess is that it's because Val doesn't like him. Val, is that why you're upset? Clip 16.
You're not even a speck in my universe.
I enjoyed that. So... he pivots to ask if it's that she hates cops and tells her that to answer her earlier question, he has killed someone. It was a guy he went to school with, and if Carl's intention with this little story was to humanize himself, it, cough, backfires. Sorry, clip 17.
I get a call on a break-in. I search the premises. All of a sudden, I feel a forearm collapsing in my windpipe. There's a gun. His.
You shot him with his own gun? What, did he aim it at you?
He jumped me.
Trying to get away. Maybe he wasn't going to use it.
You want me to feel guilty about it?
How do you not?
Doing wrong. That was his choice. His gun. His mistake.
I almost expected a musical number to break out after this. Like, doing wrong was his choice.
Yeah. I don't get the point of this revelation. Like, first of all, who cares about Carl? Second, if this is supposed to be setting up, like, her blackmailing him, like, presumably this is all on some kind of record already. So what could she do with it? Like, I don't get it.
And I think we're supposed to think that he actually does feel guilty, which is not necessarily what the line reading suggests.
Right. Anyway. So then Val's catching up David about her last fight with Abby. He has nothing to say and no empathy, of course, although he does tell her to forget her mother and look after herself, which is not the worst advice. Clip 18.
And what do you suggest? Prozac? Art therapy? A lobotomy? I killed my father, David.
I'm trying to help you here.
But you can't. You told me that. Go talk to somebody, but not you.
I don't know what to do for you, okay? I can't begin to understand what you've been through.
Well, maybe I found somebody who does.
Professional, I hope.
He was when he was on the job, so yeah, professional. I can understand. More than you.
What do you want me to say here? You're fixed? Congratulations?
No, just thank me. You're off the hook.
I still don't know what the point of this is. Like, she's going to tell Carl? I don't get it. This is so stupid.
And why are you still associating with Lord Pissface? He's such an asshole. Like, I don't know what's more frustrating. His, like, smirky, dismissive tone about what she's saying and everything to do with her for the last 2 months. Yeah. Or the fact that she keeps coming back to be like, well, I did what you said. Like, please approve of me. Why? Who cares?
I know.
He's wearing an SUV as a pair of pants. Fuck him.
Yeah. So Abby is packing when Val goes to see her. Val muses about dressing up like Abby to play grown up because she didn't like being a kid. Abby says she didn't get to be one for very long. And they go on in clip 90.
What's stuff with Dad? I felt powerless. And powerful. Strange combination.
When I suspected, I did confront him. At first he lied, and then he said he'd get help. What could I do? He was your father.
Mom, don't, okay? I understand.
You couldn't.
I'm trying. But we need time.
Of course. Will you let me know?
No, no, time together. I know Dad was the enemy, not you.
She was the enemy also. I'm comfortable with that. She sucks.
Yeah. I don't get where this is. I mean, even having seen the next episode already, I still don't understand whether this is all a gambit, because as we keep saying, it is so dumb. But she asks Abby to stay for a couple more days, and the bellman comes to get her bags, and Abby says they're not checking out after all. Yay, more Abby. Hooray, we all love her performance. And
I mean, I understand why it's happening. It's to maneuver Val onto the runway to take off, but
sure.
Like, why this way? This is so dumb.
And it's so slow as well. But anyway, that's it. So let us move on to naming our MVP. Ray Wise, who spent exactly the right amount of time on the show, if the amount of time you have to spend is zero time.
Reggie Jackson. Good. Just ask him.
Least valuable player. I'm going to say Kelly, who made this budget crisis all about her and her career growth, like a real dick.
Yeah, fair. I'm tempted to say David, but I'm actually going to go with whatever Stunad at the foundation allowed a Brandon ghostwritten editorial to guilt him or her into renewing the funding for the Saint Clinic Clinic. Ugh.
We have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
At Leslie AF Rich on Twitter asks us to list 5 ways the show would be different if continuity were taken into account. Well, we wouldn't be dealing with all this Val bullshit, for one.
Yeah, that's one. Perhaps someone on the set might be able to remind David that at one time he was in love with Val and was dating her and should perhaps try to imbue his performance with some vestige of caring.
We wouldn't keep seeing the Hunter's house in Southern California or the office, because neither of those existed until season 9.
Could someone please recollect that Kelly missed most school and certainly should not, regardless of whether she graduated with honors, be running a clinic?
And I'm not sure that the Walsh house should be as much of a flop house as it is if people were paying rent to live there, which I feel like they should be.
Indeed.
That makes 5.
Next time on Again With This, Brandon has an existential journalism in crisis, David has a role in The Hay with Sophie, and Vincent Young has an aneurysm trying to indicate grief. You'll have an aneurysm trying to indicate barf when you get a load of our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv. You can follow this here podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm Speck in Your Universe, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Very Dry Martini, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Grifted Student Loan, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
Only Dave's in the room. Only Dave's available for recording. So I'm just going to start the show and everybody else can just join in whenever they get here. Here we go.
We'll go to a nice dinner. We can talk about whatever you want. It'll be nice. Hi, David.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 9, Episode 1, The Miracle of Pi. And now here are your hosts, David Cole, and maybe some others. I don't know where everybody else is, and I got stuff to do, so I just started the show. So I am just going to wing it. So we open the episode, and the whole gang's at the Peach Pit, power-eating peach pies. And Donna gets really sick and throws up everywhere. And everybody else is like, ew, ew, and they get up to leave, but they're slipping and sliding in the vomit, and they all fall down. And they're all laughing, and they're all having a good time. Uh-huh, we slipped in the vomit. It's pretty funny. Which leads us to our first clip.
So what exactly are you planning on being famous for?
Being me.
Meanwhile, outside the Peach Pit, the cops have pulled up, and guns drawn. They're telling Steve to come out of the Peach Pit slowly, with his hands up. Apparently the newspaper he runs is haunted and is, you know, like dropping neighborhood commercial property values. Steve slowly comes out of the Peach Pit doors and asks the cops what up, which leads to this exchange.
Hey, what's it about?
It's about family. Look, I know I'm showing up late in the game here, but I want to help.
So what do you want to do?
I don't know. I mean, we can talk about it. You tell me what to do, I'll do it.
I told you years ago. You start in the mailroom, you do the executive training program, you learn the ropes, and then you be the son who could watch your father's back. So my guts aren't chum on the water for sharks like these.
And then the cops kill Steve, and Brendan comes back with Dylan, and they make out on the counter, as Brenda's getting into it, she starts going into that waitress persona, and that leads to our fourth clip.
Three olives. Anything less is a crime. Tell that to the IRS. Running low.
Let's go somewhere else for a drink. Come on.
Frankly, I'm...
So the people that were watching Brenda and Dylan make it out on the counter get up to do some bookkeeping with the government. And they are left alone to continue their reunion lovemaking as the gang watches sneakily from the corner, which gets us clip 5.
Look, I'm trying here. I thought we were getting somewhere. And the other day at the park.
Was for you.
For me. Oh, so it meant nothing to you.
Don't pull it apart. Just take it with you and go home.
Look, I listed the boat today. The second mortgage on the club, I can get you $400,000 or $500,000.
I'm sure your mother will appreciate it.
Again, nothing. I reach out to you to reach for the stinking martini.
Oh, that was the one thing I had left to look forward to.
Nobody to blame but yourself.
Words to remember.
Hi.
And then the jukebox explodes, and everybody in the Peach Pit is covered with neon shards and bubbly water.
Oh. Hi.
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 I'm going to stop recording. I've been recording for 4 minutes about this episode.
Sorry. This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.